Now, the sort of rule of thumb that seems to be evolving in other tumors, particularly colon cancer, is a sort of 6-week window between surgery and bevacizumab. Does that work for ovarian also?
We didn't test that question. In our study, we decided that we would take that as a given because that seemed to be the most prudent thing to do. And so what we did was we said that our patients would not receive bevacizumab with their first cycle of chemotherapy, which is routinely administered 3 or 4 weeks after surgery. So the time before our patients saw bevacizumab for the first time was 6 to 8 weeks. And we felt that was a safe interval based on the larger colorectal experience. And we have found that that's generally been the case.
Now, in the face of that, there's also, as you mentioned, the issue of bowel perforation. Again, we've heard this in different tumors, particularly colon cancer, and I'm curious about what your take is on this. I don't know whether right now, for example, you're using bevacizumab in sort of an off-label, off-protocol situation, and if you are, what do you say to patients about that risk, and how do you individualize it to the patient and the type of surgery, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think that's a really important question. I think the bowel perforation has been not common, but has been observed in colon cancer and ovarian cancer. What's interesting is the same drug does not seem to cause bowel perforation in lung cancer or breast cancer. And so what that says to me is it says to me that you have to have some kind of an abnormal process going on in the peritoneal cavity on the surface of the bowel in order to put the patient at risk. So having said that, I am more concerned about patients with bulky tumor on the surface of their small intestine or large intestine, but we have been unable so far to really ascertain what the true risk factors are. And so I think that in a situation where you might offer such treatment to a patient in an off-label setting, one has to be very clear and explain to the patient and her family that the incidence of bowel perforation is not completely established, that it may be as low as 1%, it may be as high as 8 or 9%, depending on the study that you look at, and it's almost certainly somewhere in between. There are a couple of interesting things about the bowel perforation. One is if one looks back at the canister study from 2006, although there were a number of bowel perforations, I normally think of an intestinal perforation in a cancer patient as being a fatal event, and yet most of those patients were able to survive, some even with conservative therapy. So that I think that the amount of bowel contents that escape following a perforation may be different depending on the circumstance, and that's one thing to think of. But certainly the patient must be prepared for the risk of that, just as the patient needs to be prepared for the risk of blood clots, stroke, heart attack. And although these are uncommon events, you know, they're profound. And the consequences for a sick patient who has one of these other events can be very serious. And so patients need to know this. And I think outside of a clinical trial, one needs to be careful that you're thinking about this as a relatively later intervention, so that you're not running the risk of shortening people's lives.
You know, I guess the way you described the bowel perforation reminded me a little bit about how some of the colon cancer studies described a similar thing, that they had bowel perforations, but it wasn't a catastrophic event. And I think also on our colon series, Mike O'Connell from the NSABP told us that at this coming ASCO meeting, they're reporting the safety data from the NSABP adjuvant colon study, CO8, and they're not going to report an increased incidence of bowel perforation. Of course, NED, there's no tumor, mm-hmm. which sort of supports what you're saying.
Yeah. My colleague Bill Tu has gone back and looked at our experience with bowel perforations in the pre-bevacizumab era with ovary cancer. And it's not as common as you might think. It's relatively rare. Everything happens, but it doesn't happen commonly. And so I don't think there's much doubt that there's some increase in risk for a patient with existing tumor on the surface of bowel, but I think it's probably below the 5% level and is probably acceptable given the great potential for bevacizumab for carefully selected patients who don't have underlying hypertension, who don't have a predisposing clotting disorder, who've not had a bleeding diathesis, who don't have brain metastases. I think there are a lot of patients who ought not to receive bevacizumab, but I think for selected patients, it can be profoundly helpful.